Would you like to know how to get people to know, like, and trust you much more so that you can make more money in your business, build better relationships, whether that's friendships, personal relationships, intimate relationships, and just generally be more connected with people and have a more rich, fulfilling life? And even further, would you like to learn that from somebody that knows what they're doing, has built out a multiple seven-figure business, and just done it the right way? Well, if you're interested in any of all those myriad of questions, you're going to want to listen to this episode all the way through, where we had on my good friend Ryan Thogmart. Ryan is an absolute legend of a human being, has a great family. He's a great father, great husband, great family man, as I mentioned, but businessman as well, and just a man of faith. Truly a guy that just seems to have it, a lot of it figured out. So we'll jump into this interview here in just 1 second, but gotta let you know about Just Grow Visions. We just launched our free Facebook group, and really the goal of this group is to help you craft that vision in your mind and really get crystal clear so that you can go out there and actually create it very, very quickly, okay? So if you'd like to learn how we do that, we have a very systematic structure. We've had over 30 clients, and we've had tons and tons of testimonials of people reaching their dream life very, very quickly. So head on over to justgrowvisions.com to learn all about that. And you can join our free Facebook group, where we go live on Wednesday nights. But without further ado, let's jump to this interview with Ryan Thogmart.
Like, that's the coolest part of life. Like, business is awesome. It has struggles. Like, you know, you go through client retention, you shift, you figure out different verticals. Like, oh, that's never going to change, right? It doesn't change, you know. Uh-huh. You have seasons in business where income's great. You have seasons where income drops. You have seasons where clients come on board like crazy and you're scaling. You have others where it's pruning season. But like, the life component of it is the piece that, like, you don't get any of that back. Once this season's done, we don't go back to this season.
That hits, man. I remember seeing a post from somebody recently that said they used to really value people that were like obsessed, and like the Gary V's and the Grant Cardone, just tunnel vision, nothing else besides business. But then he's like, now I kind of value people that just kind of have a good balanced life and are enjoying it.
There's no secret code. I got asked to go on a pretty high level, like go to a high level event, committed to it, invite only, just know that it would be massively impactful, the connections that are made in this really intimate, middle of the mountains, like just private event, and the dates changed. And the dates fall right in the middle of a 2-week family vacation. And so we travel a ton. Like, we're blessed to be able to travel. I travel to speak. The family gets to go with us. Our kids do online school. So like, nothing holds us back from anything that we want to do. But we sit down as a family and go, okay, like, business doesn't stop because we travel. So mom and dad are going to be tapped in. You know, we're going to go to Disney. We went to Disney for 10 days. 3 days, dad doesn't go to the park because dad's got to do this, this, and this. Cool. But what's the one vacation where there's no interruptions? Which one do you want that to be? And it's like, it's this one. And so I'm like, hey, I've got a hard boundary line of, like, I cancel everything. I don't do any business for 2 weeks. Grateful to be able to have that opportunity, but, like, this is the no zone. And that's hard. But there's, I only get this season for, like, this much longer. And So there is a balance of life and business. I don't think that there's a perfect balance that is uniform. I think it's different for you. It's different for me. But there's boundaries that you have to set to be able to have the life that you want in those seasons. And those boundaries move season to season. But like, there's some boundaries that are just, you know, and what happens with a boundary line when you cross it, then it becomes a lot easier to tiptoe over it. And so, like, this is that moment of, like, these are the 2 weeks where, you know, you can write me a check for $1 million to come speak, and I'm going to say no, because these are the 2 weeks. And unless you have those boundaries in place, then things get blurred, and it's really difficult. And I learned that years ago. Just, you get in a really unhealthy place with You know, you don't show up as a dad, you don't show up as a husband. You're like, hey, I'm building all of this for you. Did anyone ever ask him if he wanted to? I never asked him, hey, I'm going to do all of this. I'm going to work every night, 3-4 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to miss dinners. I'm going to miss this. I'm going to not tuck you in. I'm not going to do all these things. But you're going to get all of this. No, I never sat down and had a conversation. Do you want all this? Or would you rather me show up and be present and figure out how to do both? That had to be, you know, you live apart in the same house from your wife for 8 months, and you use different entrances, so you don't have to pass each other. You have to have hard conversations. And so this season of setting boundaries serves us a lot better than it did when we didn't have boundaries.
I really believe in, and I think we're just going to,
Is it going? Okay, dope. All right, let's do it.
I mean, I started doing stuff in here for the first time last week. Before I usually did it downstairs. This just seems like cool and like more intimate, and that's how our conversations have always started. I'm not ever like, hey, we're starting.
I love it.
That's so good. But yeah, Ryan Thog Martin, is that how you say it?
That's it, nailed it. You got one of those last names that's hard to pronounce too, so I'm not even gonna try.
You try?
No.
Arapkalis.
Arapkalis?
Yep.
Arapkalis. All right.
So, but what you were saying about boundaries, it's interesting that you bring that up, because that's just been so much in my awareness lately. And it's like that integrity with yourself, that if you don't have that, it really fucks you up.
Yeah.
It really does. Because I think there's two sides to things where like people really have challenges, and I had so many challenges on both fronts. Was one, not knowing what you want, mm-hmm. which I think stems from not knowing who you are. Mm-hmm. Then secondly, knowing what you want and like knowing the course of actions to go through, but not like sticking to those actions. Like what you said, you set hard boundaries and you stick to them. If you don't stick to them, it's gonna eat at you.
Yeah.
And I think another big thing too, this has been big for me lately, is like set points. Mm-hmm. So not like overwhelming yourself or creating such a gap from like going, let's say the gym. You go from not going for a year straight to I'm going to work out 5 days a week and cut my calories in half. Like, it's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So you have to like, all right, well, I'm going to go 1 day a week. And then you get up to point on that. And then you're like, okay, I'm going to go 2 days a week, 3 days a week. But it's just like what you're saying is that if you were to say, hey, this is a hard boundary, but it's down. It's such a good opportunity. Right. You know, pay me. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, that's going to create so much dissonance within yourself. You're not going to believe yourself and have that integrity and confidence in yourself to hold your word next time.
Yeah. So, I mean, I fall back on Bible verse, let your yes be yes and your no be no.
Say it again?
Let your yes be yes and your no be no. I don't know what verse it is. It's in there somewhere. But that's a principle that my wife and I had to really set in place, because for boundaries to work, they have to be boundaries. Mm-hmm. If the fence has got a hole in it and you can go through it anytime you want, then it's not really a boundary.
Yeah.
And boundaries are for seasons, and there's some boundaries that that extend longer than a season and transcend seasons. But you know, let your yes be yes, your no be no. So if I say we're not going to do this and we're going to tap in here, then if that wavers, all of a sudden now my word doesn't become as powerful as what it was. Mm-hmm. And when you have a family, or you have even in a business scenario with partnerships, employees, you know, all those things, I think that boundaries is something we had to learn in our family, and we had to learn it in the business. I looked at boundaries as things that would capture, would kind of put a lid on creativity. So when you're managing a bunch of creatives that do graphics and do audio and video and strategy and all this thing as a creative agency, I looked at rules as boundaries. Boundaries caps creativity. And what I learned, because I'm more of the visionary, my wife is the operations, you know, she wants boundaries. I'm like, let's let them be creative. Like, come when they want, leave when they want. Due date, what's that? You know, we got a lot more efficiency out of our team when we set proper boundaries. So the analogy for me that worked really well was, imagine playing football with no out of bounds. So if you have no out of bounds, nobody really knows what's expected, where you're supposed to go, how you're going to run your route, what you're going to do, where you're going to be, timing, everything's off. Mm-hmm. But if when you put boundaries in place, well, now I know how to play the game. And so for people and employees and us as individuals, boundaries allow us to know what's expected and how far we can go and how we can play the game. You can become a lot more laser focused and a lot more efficient when you know what the boundaries are. Mm-hmm. I can operate right here and I can take my gifting, apply it in this area and go to work. So, I mean, we didn't have boundaries in our relationship when it came to parenting, when it came to decisions, when it came to travel. Like, we read the book Boundaries by Dr. Henry Cloud.
Never read it.
I would recommend it to anybody. Yeah. Insane. It's like a 13-hour audiobook.
Wow.
My wife and I did it together, and it really helped with relationships in our life and, you know, what we needed and what we didn't need and how to set boundaries on relationships. But it applies, like, that concept of boundaries and what's taught in that book apply to really any scenario, whether it's business or relationships or whatnot. And insanely impactful. I would totally recommend it.
Yeah, I'll pick that up. What's one thing that stood out to you from that book?
For me, it was when I was looking at relationships, there were relationships that that weren't serving us in our life, that were more of a strain. And for me, I needed the biblical backing to understand that boundaries was okay, because it felt like I was Xing people out of my life that I shouldn't. Or internally, I'm like, okay, this relationship is draining and it doesn't make sense, but this person is somebody that's, you know, let's say it's family. It's like, well, you're supposed to respect family and the hierarchy of a family. And for me, I needed the biblical backing that boundaries were biblical. And so it's not a Christian book, but Dr. Henry Cloud is a Christian, so he uses biblical teachings to back up boundaries and how he outlines them and why you need boundaries and all those things. So for me, that's what made it click.
So, like, understanding the reasoning on why you want boundaries instead of like, hey, here's a strategy on how to build your boundary. Yep. Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. Because I mean, that analogy is so good, the football field.
You run around like crazy.
I think about that, like, the fact that the Super Bowl is just now is like, imagine if the Super Bowl had no...
Yeah. Some dude run down the aisle in the stands and you toss him the ball. Like, how's that work? You
know? I mean, but that's what's crazy is because that's honestly how a lot of people are living their lives. What was kind of like the shift that got you? I mean, obviously you read the book, but where did this whole boundaries thing come into place first for you? Because it sounded like there was something where you actually weren't living like that before.
No, we weren't. So, like, the first boundary that was set was more probably so in the home. I mean, as an entrepreneur, you got ideas all day long, right? Visionary, and it's like, okay, what direction do you go? And as I'm definitely a visionary leader, CEO. I'm not the processes person. I can look at processes as somebody else's business and have impact. My own, I'm like, nah, that will never work. This will never work. Like, I'm too close to it. So I spend a lot of time in the clouds just dreaming and vision, and then I know how we'll make the money. And I, you know, I did the whole, okay, if I'm not grinding 24/7, then I'm not producing. You know, the whole, you know, I lived by what Gary Vee said. I just did. For 2 or 3 years, I consumed literally everything and would just work nonstop. And so one of the first boundaries was that work stayed at the office. So I had to set a boundary to get out of the house, go get an office, build a team. And I had an agreement with my wife that when I came home, work stopped. Unless it was like a fire emergency that whatever. There were exceptions. But it wasn't I had to be home at a certain time. It was whenever I came home, that's when work stopped. That may be 4 o'clock one day. It may be 11 o'clock the next night. Mm-hmm. You know, like... But when I came home, then I was tapped in. And so that boundary served us very well, mm-hmm. because it allowed me to be present where I was at. When I was at work, I was 100% tapped into just what I was doing. When I was home, I was 100% tapped into just that, because everything, I got done what I needed to get done, and then I came home. which allowed me to be more present as a father, allowed me to be more present as a husband, and just all the way around, it was healthier boundaries. That's not going to work for everybody. That's what worked for me. And when I saw what that produced and the outcome of that, I'm like, oh, this boundaries thing, there might be something to this.
Right.
Like, what other areas do we need to set boundaries in, whether it's business or personal, that are going to serve us? And again, you know, when we shut our office down and sent everybody remote during the pandemic, you know, those boundary lines got crossed. We had to set different boundaries. They had to shift. So it was like, I'm going to stay in this room of the house when I'm working and I'll be 100% tapped in. Don't bother me. When I step out of that, I'm in full dad mode. And that was different times of the day. Like when you're home and kids do online school, so that never stops. And, you know, my wife is running operations for the company and then has a couple of her own things on the side. Like, there's a lot of moving pieces. So it may be 1 hour I'm tapped in and no one's bothering me. The next hour I'm dad mode and then I'm back in. So seasons require different boundaries that, that fit in with what's going to create the best life and the best flow.
I like how you say tapped in.
Tapped in?
Yeah, it's just, when you say that, it makes me, it's like another way to say staying present.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. That's what it is.
And it's just, that's really where I feel the zest of life is. That's where it all is. Like right now in this conversation, being present. When I'm working later, present there. When I'm hanging out with friends, there. But it's like, be where you are.
Yeah.
And I notice in myself is when I'm not where I'm at, like where I'm not physically, if I'm not mentally where I'm at physically, I feel like that's where it creates a lot of strain.
Yeah.
Why don't you share, because I don't want to gloss over like the business that you've built and the way you've done it and with your image. It's such a cool story. So, I mean, I know you've shared it a ton, so we don't have to dive.
No, I'll give you the cliff notes.
I mean, imagine that everyone is always very, very curious. Like,
they are.
What do you do? And then you tell them you're in what you do, and they're like, what?
You can dress like an idiot and do that? That's usually what. Are you a drug dealer? I've been asked, like, at conferences when I speak and dress this way. I've had people come up to me afterwards, like, tell me what drugs you do. You have to do drugs. I'm like, I've never touched a single drug ever. No, I don't drink. I don't smoke. None of it. No, they're blown away. Like, there's no freaking way you look that way. I'm just entrepreneurial. I started a business out of high school, went to college, ran it from my dorm room, dropped out of school, sold the company 3 years later.
What company was that?
It was called Memphis Shade. It does not exist anymore. Okay. I was partners with another guy. We built sports websites for high schools, and then I would go around and sell the advertising. So we would, you know, sell banner advertising to local businesses. So this was like 2001, 2, 3, 4, before, like, I was an athlete, and, you know, if you wanted exposure, you had to create your own highlight reel. You know, I remember printing out DVDs, had a laser burner, printing graphics on them, mailing them to coaches. Like,
no kidding.
AAU wasn't what it is now. Like, now you don't ever have to play a high school sport. You just perform in the summer AAU all year round, and coaches show up. You have social media, you have all these different outlets. In the early 2000s, you didn't have that. And most high schools had a website, but they didn't cover sports. So the idea was, we'll build these sports websites, we'll cover the sports, we'll do the photography, video, update them, and then now there's highlight content that these kids can take and distribute, and there's a place they can send a coach. And then we supported those. We did it for free for the high school, and then we supported it with local advertising, and I did the advertising sales and door-to-door. It was the first touch that most small businesses have with any type of online marketing through banner advertising. Learned how to, you know, where banner ads go on a website to get the most clicks and what mouse traffic looks like on a website to optimize it for sales. And, like, all those different things were really cool because they all apply now to what I do. But dropped out of school, sold that company 3 years later. Got out of the partnership, was ready to get married, and my wife said, like, my dad's never saying yes unless you've got some sort of income. I'm like, all right, like, 9 to 5 isn't going to be my thing. Like, working for somebody is not, I don't know if that's in my DNA. I'm like, I'll figure it out. She's like, well, until you figure it out, why don't you go work for my dad? He He needs a salesperson. You've been doing sales. So I asked, what does your dad do? And this is just like a loaded question, because the answer I got back was, my dad owns a vault company.
Vault.
So when I say vault, what do you think of?
Bank.
Yes, me too. I'm like, oh, dope. I didn't ask any questions. I'm like, think of bank vaults. Every bank has one. People have them in their house. You can put guns in them. Oh, that piece of cake, no problem. So I called her dad. He's like, yeah, come in for an interview. I show up to this concrete plant, and I read the sign, and it says concrete burial vaults. I'm like, ah, that's weird. They must do burial vaults too and bank vaults. So I walk in and I ask the secretary. I said, I'm here to apply for the bank vault sales position. Bank, what are you talking about, bank vaults? So it's concrete burial vaults. So when somebody passes away and they're buried in a cemetery, the casket goes into an outer concrete container. My father-in-law had a Wilbert burial vault franchise, and Wilbert would be considered like the Nike of the burial vault industry.
Yeah.
I knew nothing about funeral homes, knew nothing about death care. He put me on the manufacturing side of the plant to figure out how the product's made. Quickly realized that I'm not a manual labor guy. I cost him more money than I ever made him doing manual labor. Broke more crap than I produced. Once he put me on the road to do sales, I was calling on funeral homes. Being entrepreneurial, I'm like looking for the problem. Like, what's the problem? I have a solution for your vaults, whatever. What's your problem? And most of the problems that funeral homes were sharing with me, and this was 2007, related around if the consumer knew this, if the consumer knew this, like, it would make this conversation easier. This would be better. I'm like, why are you not communicating with the consumer? I'm like, well, how do we do that? Like, website, social media, content. Yeah. Most of them didn't have websites or email addresses. The death care space is probably 10 to 15 years behind most normal where we're at in life.
Yeah.
So I started blogging about these conversations, which morphed into creating the largest now online funeral publication. We have a little over 60,000 funeral directors a month from 211 countries that read that publication on a daily basis. Think of like Huffington Post, TechCrunch, Mashable, Business Insider, but for funeral homes. That's what this publication is. And so I was writing a lot about marketing, and that got exposure, got asked to speak at conferences, and eventually funeral homes were like, hey, can you help us with our marketing? I'm like, yeah, sure. And it was consultancy at first, and 2012 left the vault company and launched a social media agency dedicated to death care space. So death care would be any business that operates around death, funeral homes, cemeteries, crematories, casket companies, vault companies. If they got a product, they sell to a funeral home. We create the strategy, manage all the social content. So just like any normal marketing agency would, but death care is our main focus. Now, in the last 3 years, we've migrated outside of death care a lot because it's very attractive to, let's say, one of our clients, Tossits, which is one of the top selling car trash bags. They come to us and go, wait a second, you can sell a funeral through Instagram and Facebook ads. Okay, that's the thing nobody wants to buy. If you can do that, then a trash bag ought to be a piece of cake. Mm-hmm. It really comes down to the creative and how you target it. So we're doing a lot more now outside of death care, but death care is the main focus of our business.
What are some headlines that you have on your ads?
I mean, it's not as wild as you would think because it's so relational.
Yeah.
So we rarely talk about death,
okay.
Like almost never. So think of it as, and this trips everybody out there because like, man, that's gotta be the most depressing job ever. Like you're just talking about death all day long. Absolutely not. Like it is so inspiring because I couldn't do what a funeral director does every day. I mean, it would be, I mean, it's mentally just exhausting and they've gotta be on their game 100% of the time. I look at funeral directors like pastors. Like pastors don't get an off Sunday. You get an off Sunday, half the congregation doesn't come back. You get an off day as a funeral director, that family goes and tells everybody how terrible you are and you can lose half your business. So it's a very relationship driven business. Really what we're doing is personal branding around the funeral director. Most funeral directors in the United States are independently owned, family-owned businesses, multi-generational. You're building content around the people because that's why I go to that business. Mm-hmm. I fully believe that any business can have success through relationship and authenticity. So think about your business. Most of the business that you're getting is because of relationships that you've built with people. They trust you to give you their life story and what they dream. Mm-hmm. Most people never fully articulate their dreams to somebody else because it's something that we protect. They got to have a lot of trust and transparency in you as a person to sit down and share their the thing that drives them every single day that they've never shared with anybody, and then manifest what that's going to look like 20 years from now. Mm. I got to sit down and share that with me. I don't have a relationship with them. They'll share it with you because you've built this relationship. And there's authenticity because you're living what it is that you're helping them do. And so from a marketing perspective, you know, marketing and advertising are two different things. Advertising is I'm going to push a message on you and I'm going to tell you what you need to think. Marketing is I'm going to tell you a story and let you create, let you decide what you want to do. So as a marketing agency, we help funeral directors tell their story. And we market them as an individual. And yeah, there's value in the brand loyalty and things of that nature, but it's dominantly relationship driven. So it's really content about how they serve, what their hobbies are, their family. You know, so we get them to create content like five things a funeral home will never tell you. Five things you would never expect to see in a funeral home. Like really, it's not, you can take what's trending. So like this or that content will get a great engagement, you know, like you see influencers do, like this outfit, that outfit gets a ton of engagement. Great. Funeral directors, this suit or that suit, this tie, that tie, this cremation urn, this cremation urn. Mm. Now you've introduced product into the equation and the psychology of the consumer to go, wait a second, I didn't get offered that when my mom passed and I would have loved that piece of cremation jewelry. All it was an Instagram reel that got 30,000 views because it was a simple 6-second this or that, and I didn't know that you could get that at a funeral home. It's not like, but that builds the relationship because the more I engage with somebody, the more I know about you, the more connected we are, the more I trust you. So then when we run an ad that's limited time offer on a cremation package or a burial package, I've been in that ecosystem. Mm-hmm. I've digested content about why you think it's valuable to plan your funeral. I've listened to you have other people on with testimonials of the value they got out of pre-planning their funeral. This is probably something we should have a conversation about. I'll fill out a lead form and I'll go in and talk to you about it. 40% of the leads that we drive for a funeral home close in 24 hours. People are buying a funeral through a Facebook ad, but it isn't because, yes, the creative is insane and it's really good, but it's not wild and shock and awe and really nothing to do with death. It's because the relationship with the funeral home has been made so strong, or the funeral director, because of the content.
And it's like, is it almost kind of like an emergency ER type of thing, where it's like they call you when they need you?
The funeral home, or like the consumer to the funeral home?
The consumer to the funeral
home. Consumer to the funeral home a lot is what we would call at need. It's like the death occurred, what do we do?
Yeah.
So what we're trying to do is create content and get in front of the consumer before they're ever in that position.
Yeah.
Because data supports that 80% of the time, if someone has a relationship with a funeral director, that's the funeral home that they're going to use. Mm-hmm. If they're in proximity to that location. Most people won't travel more than 10 to 15 miles to a funeral home.
Well, that even reminds me of one of my mentors talks about this. He's like, a lot of people think with their marketing and advertising, it's that you're choosing the customer, but when in reality, it's not.
No,
it's their, you know, everyone's got endless options. Yeah. I mean, that's a wide principle across everything today. Mm-hmm. There's so many options, so many food options, there are so many influencer options, there are so many product options, there's so many options. So it's like, how do you continue to build that relationship consistently? And then when you've proven yourself enough, then they'll be like, okay.
Yep.
All right.
So, I mean, in a lot of the same principles that we work through with funeral homes are exactly the same that we work through with businesses that are outside death care. Mm-hmm. It's a different approach. I mean, you look at a car dealership. I either like a car or I don't. But then where I choose to buy it from becomes, do I like the salesperson or not? Mm-hmm. I mean, you think about here, there are multiple Ford dealerships. There are multiple Mercedes dealerships. There's multiple, it doesn't matter what car brand it is. You have options. So, one, who do I see enough on my feed that captures my attention? Because I've only lived here 2 years. So, we've bought in a couple cars since we've lived here. And it's been, what do we like? And then who's popping up? Who do I trust?
Yeah.
And then that experience dictates what happens next. If that, if that salesperson goes to another dealership, if they're smart, they bring the customer list with them, they call everybody and let them know they're at this new dealership, and mm-hmm. and now that's, now people follow them. So I think relationship is at the core of every business. And, you look at even a big brand, let's look at Nike. Nike is so good at tailoring content to a specific persona.
And that was going to be my next question. How do you build relationships at scale?
Knowing the customer and speaking directly to them. And that sounds so basic and broad, but let's break it down. We'll use Nike. I rarely see ads for Nike running because I don't run. I don't create content about running. I never talk about running. I don't search about running. Yeah. My wife, she gets hit with running content all the time, but my wife gets hit with running content with women influencers that Nike uses in a campaign. She doesn't see male runners. She sees women. Mm-hmm. Nike knows as a woman, you're most of the time insecure about running. You're going to do it at dark. You're going to do it early in the morning when people aren't going to see you. And it's more about image than it is about anything else. And that ad is so tailored to when she sees it, that person speaking in that ad, that if it's a print ad, what it says, it's so tailored to that exact core consumer. And that's how you do it at scale. I don't physically have a relationship with anybody at Nike, but Nike speaks to me in different ways that other brands don't. I love sneakers. So,
clearly.
Let's look at, I probably own more Yeezys than anything else. I have no relationship with Kanye West. Don't agree with Kanye West most of the time. Hmm. But I really like the shoe. And the shoe is marketed to me as a culture statement. And it becomes part of the brand. The relationship is with what status comes with that shoe, in a sense. So it's a conversation piece. It supports the brand. It supports kind of my vibe, my look. It's a relationship, not with a person or with a logo. It's a relationship with the product and how it speaks and how it's been marketed. It was exclusive and it was hard to get.
Those are the amplifiers.
Yeah, I think there's at scale, it still comes down to, do I align with the brand in some circumstances? I look at, we work with one of the top five global pastors. And we run his entire brand strategy. It's all relationship. Whether somebody is in Uganda and they download the content, or they're in Texas and they watch the content, it doesn't matter because they stream anywhere. So the relationship becomes with the content that I'm consuming. Do I relate to that pastor? Do I agree with that pastor? It's a personal brand. I mean, every business at scale, there's some sort of relationship but it's knowing the customer. It's really,
that's what it is.
Data drives the strategy. Strategy should drive the creative. Most people get it wrong and go, if I have good creative, then I can figure out the strategy and then I'll look at the data. We like to take the data. The data is the data. This tells us what the consumer likes, what they want when it comes. We'll go back to a funeral home. The most profitable, it's so bad to say, the most profitable consumer for a funeral home to market to is between the ages of 45 and 65 plus. So typically, plus. Yeah, so the average age of death for a male is like 76, 78, something like that, somewhere around there. Typically, the male will live longer than, or die before the woman does in a relationship. So typically, that spouse isn't the one that's going to take care of the arrangements, because there's going to be a younger son or daughter that's probably going to lead that, because mom's going to be in even more grief and isn't in the right mindset to plan this thing. There's 213 decisions that you got to make when you go in for a funeral arrangement. It's a lot of decisions.
Wow.
Which is why pre-planning is so valuable. So one of the things that we know about that boomer demographic is that the number one thing that boomers spend money on, ancillary income, is travel. 90% of that travel is to see family. On average, they'll spend $6,000 a year on just ancillary travel. So if we're marketing a funeral home, then we create content around what it looks like to plan a funeral or plan a travel trip. Like, you're going to go on Google, you're going to search hotels, you're going to search airline tickets, you're going to do all these things. And then we relate that to how you would plan a funeral. So just like you're planning travel, you come in, we do the same things you plan a funeral. Because travel plays off of their interests, now we can interject how funeral planning is the same as planning this trip that you really love to do and you do multiple times a year. Well, now it makes sense. So we know the customer, we know what they like. The data drives the strategy drives the creative.
Yeah. Lately, I've been getting on a bunch of market research calls, mm-hmm. just with target prospects or just people that know me and have been like events or whatever. And I'm kind of like, I'm happy I'm doing it, but I'm like kicking myself like, why have I not done this before?
Yeah.
I just like assumed like everyone like thought exactly the way I thought and saw these videos the way I saw them. And it's just like that data is invaluable.
It's invaluable if you know how to leverage it.
Get in the head of people.
Yeah, you got to get in the head, but I mean, then the creative becomes part of it, right? You got to capture attention. How long can you hold somebody's attention? Now you just can't create anything that you want to create. I mean, you think of marketing 10 years ago on social, like, you just put something out and thousands of people would see it. You'd get exposure, attention. Attention was the currency. Attention still is the currency, but the right views are more profitable than more views.
Yeah.
Like, if a video that gets a million views might be great, but a video that gets 500 views with the right people is going to be way more profitable than just we got a million views.
Yeah, I mean, they talk about I just remember it all the time. I had some mentors that are always talking, oh, I have a list that's whatever, 5,000 people. And then there's this other guy that has a list of 200,000 people and I outsell them.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not the numbers, it's the relationship with the numbers.
That's right.
Not the numbers, the people.
The people. Relationship is the center of everything. Connection.
So if you could break it down even further, how do you really connect with someone?
Man. I think that the best way to connect with somebody is to listen. I mean, okay. I'm gonna say this, and when I think about when you and I first met, I'm like, this guy's really quiet. Like, you listen so intently. Yeah. I think that's how you connect with people. There's a connection when you feel like somebody is really digesting. So I mean, think about it in a relationship. You know, if I'm on my phone while my wife's trying to break something down to me, she's going to be really frustrated because I might be listening, but I'm not really listening. Eye contact. It just goes back to being a good human being, right? Like, right. Eye contact. You listen. You really hear somebody. You repeat back to them what they're saying. That builds connection. How can you make that person feel special? All those things apply when, you know, go right back to what we just said. When you really know the consumer, then you can create the content where they go, man, they're listening to me. How many times have you hopped on the phone and saw an ad and like, I literally was just talking about this. Like, are they listening? Probably, but you know what? I'm probably going to buy that product because like I wanted it. They were listening.
Wow, that's, that's interesting because, you know, they always talk about how, oh, I said something and then all of a sudden it popped up on my feed.
Yeah. That's somebody's exactly probably listening, about. But it's also really good targeting. Like, we were just kind of talking about how some of the ways that we can target consumers to put them at the right position where they're going to need a funeral home, what does that look like? So there's really good targeting there. But I mean, I think at the end of the day, building connection comes down to intently listening to somebody. You have to make somebody feel like you really get them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because even emotional. I had a friend that was asking me, like, how do you connect with people? And it's interesting because he's definitely one to speak a lot.
Yeah.
Do you listen? Yeah. I don't think that was what I said, but it makes a lot of sense. My grandfather was, I was very similar to him. He was quiet, but you could tell he's listening. And it was interesting too, I think about this, is that they talk about a lot, like years back, decades back, you only talk when you had something to say.
Mm-hmm.
And it was important. And I guess I heard that and I was like, well, that makes a lot of sense. Like a lot of people are just talking to hear their voice.
Yeah, so true. I mean, I get a bad rap a lot because I'm not as loud as I dress. Put me on a stage, I'm way more comfortable in front of 10,000 people than I am if you throw me in a room of, you know, when we were at the Growth House. Like, that's an uncomfortable environment for me where I got to go around and make conversation with this small talk.
Yeah,
I'm better at listening, or put me on a stage where everybody else is listening. Like, one-on-one is I'm just not as confident in that environment. But a lot of times that gets twisted as somebody's super arrogant and cocky. Uh-huh. But if you think about the people that are the most quiet, they're processing their problems, processing. And then when they do speak, they only speak about what they know, but they deliver crazy value.
One of the Denzel movies? Where he was Frank Lucas, the drug lord. What was that one? Do you not remember?
No, I don't.
I think the quote in that movie, I'm forgetting what it was. It's a really great movie. But he said, like, the loudest one in the room is the weakest. Because, like, you know everything about them. You can read them quickly.
That's
like,
good.
When someone's quiet, you don't really know what's going on.
You don't. You don't know what they're thinking, what they're processing. It's good, man. It's good. Like, it's so, I think one of the most valuable principles that we can teach people is how to just make somebody feel seen and heard. I mean, I love the freedom that we have. My kids have been traveling with us to conferences and business meetings and business dinners since, like, I remember one of the publicly traded companies that we can consult with, we had a dinner with their chairman of the board, and I remember hooking my daughter's, like, she was like 6 months old, hooking her little high chair thing onto the table in the restaurant. Like, they've been going with us everywhere, but like what they learn from going and being in those environments is, like, they can look you in the eye, they can shake a hand, they can ask you a question, they can have a conversation, they can listen, they can make eye contact. I mean, I think those are the most valuable skills that we can teach people. And I got a long way to go in understanding how to create connection better, how to listen, how to love on people, how to care for people. But I think too, like, what I love about how we live through social so much is, like, it's impossible to be fake anymore. Like, even if you create this really great lifestyle on Instagram, there's still people that know how you're really living. So it's impossible to be two different people. And authenticity is huge because authenticity helps build relationship. Mm-hmm. And when you connect with somebody, you understand who's really authentic and who's not. And when somebody's authentic to who they are, immediately there's a deeper connection and more trust. Mm-hmm. I look at that in brands as well. Like, I mean, brands that try to be something that they're not because that's what's trending may have quick flash in the pan success, but the long term isn't there. They come and they go.
Well, I think everything is energy. Mm-hmm. I always come back to that. Yeah. And that was like the big shift for me. And it's like, you can't fake energy.
Yeah.
You're true to who you are. And I think that's, that at the end of the day, I think that's what a lot of this comes down to, is like, are you living your truth? Are you being really who you are? And I think that's why it comes back to what I said in the beginning, is people don't know what they want because they don't know who they are, mm-hmm. and then therefore they can't live that. And I recognize this in myself because, and I talk about this a fair bit, but it's the metaphor of the lifeboat versus the lighthouse. You heard this one?
I have, but it's good. Hit it.
So it's like they both save people, right? Mm-hmm. They both save ships. The lifeboat goes out and saves the ships. The lighthouse just stands strong, firm, planted, and just shines its light. And for the longest time, I've wanted to help people. That's just like been in my nature. But I needed to help myself first instead of like going out and trying to help all these other people when I like didn't have my shit figured out.
Yeah.
And now that like I have more of my shit figured out, I still have a lot more shit to figure out.
We always do. It's never ending.
But it's like it's interesting because I think before I wanted to help people so much, and then I was like always like reaching out and like, hey, how can I like help you? And then now it's like I have an infinitely more amount of people that are like, oh my gosh, you've inspired me, you've done this, and I'm like, I don't even feel like I'm really doing it anymore. It's just like I'm just being me.
Yeah, it's authentic to who you are. You're living the truth. Yeah. And that's attractive to people. When we find authentic people that are living their truth, it becomes attractive because there's not a lot of that.
Why?
Oh man, this could go really deep. I mean, I personally believe that we starve for attention, so we will go path of least resistance. It's hard sometimes to be authentic. So let's talk about authenticity. I dress like this all the time. Mm-hmm. Where did this come from is the question that I, like, is this a marketing ploy? Like, it's really good marketing ploy. I wish it was, it's not. Like, you know, Sunday at church, you're going to see me dressed the same way as I'm going to go to a public board meeting with one of the publicly traded companies that we work with. I recorded a video in 2009, 2 years after I started my publication, and I had 2,500 subscribers to the publication at that time. I'd been producing content every single day for 2 years. And I had a lot of people that agreed with a lot of things that I had to say. Like, I was just new to space, new voice, had a lot of ideas from a marketing perspective of how death care companies could market. One afternoon, Saturday afternoon in 2009, I recorded a video on a webcam in my basement. I was in a t-shirt, jeans, backwards hat, had a thought. I'm like, I didn't have time to write a blog, so I just recorded a video, published it. Got absolutely destroyed. Like, I can't believe we ever listened to you. You're so unprofessional. If you walked in my funeral home looking like that, I'd throw you out. Like, I mean, hundreds of comments of just, you've ruined all your credibility. You put on a suit and tie and then come on camera. Like, your basement's a mess. Like, everything. Wow. Like, and so I was working for my father-in-law at that time, and when I made sales calls for him, I had to do the whole suit, tie, take out the earrings, shave. That's what was expected. So I said, you know, can I make a deal with you that when I do your thing, I'll play the part because that's what's respectful, that's what you want me to do, it's your business. When I do my thing, I'm just dressing how I dress. Like, he's like, yeah, go for it, but it's gonna be tough. Like, you're gonna get ate alive. I'm like, yeah, I probably will. And so I get asked all the time, why did you make that decision? Because it worked against me for probably easily the first 5 years of the business. Wow. We lost money because of the way that I looked. The way I dressed.
Yeah.
And the reason I did it was because it was a whole lot easier to just be me than it was to try to be something that I wasn't. And I couldn't imagine getting on stage trying to fill a role that somebody expected me to fill where I wouldn't be comfortable in that role. I'm never going to be able to deliver what I need to deliver. And it worked as a filter mechanism. Like, if you can't get past the way I look, our ideas from a creative standpoint, you're never going to, like, we're never going to see eye to eye. Mm-hmm. Now, it's why people hire us. Like, man, you've lived this for the last 12 years in this space. I mean, 3 months ago, I had a guy come up to me after a conference. He said, man, I agree with everything you say. I watch every piece of content you put out. But my funeral home uses your competitor and will never use you. I'm like, why? He goes, I just can't stand the way you look. I'm like, all right, fair deal, man. Like, it is what it is. So But I think that there, I would rather lose money being authentic than make more money being something that I'm not, because I'm never going to be able to fulfill that for a legacy.
That's not a real connection.
It's not. It's fake. But I think that the path of least resistance is like, just be what everybody wants you to be. Go in this room and be that person. Go in that room and be a different person. Be whoever everybody wants you to be. That's exhausting. But that, and that's why you see people so unfulfilled. So you just said, like, you got to figure your stuff out, but you're helping other people figure their stuff out at the same time. The reason that you can help other people figure their stuff out is because you figured out what fills your cup. Like, it's impossible to impact somebody and help somebody else if you can't pour from an empty cup. Yeah. You know, like, if you're really thirsty and I've got a cup, and my cup doesn't have anything in it that's going to quench your thirst, there is no possible way that I can have any value to you if you're dying of heart dehydration. Mm-hmm. But if I got this much water in that cup and you're dying of hydration, I can help you. But I can't put anything in my cup until we pour something into it. So if you picture yourself as that cup, to be able to pour something out to somebody else, you got to be pouring in at the same time. I just got off a mastermind call. That's why I was 2 minutes late, because I was wrapping up a mastermind call that I'm in, because it's a non-negotiable. It's another boundary of, like, that fills my cup. I can't deliver 100% of what I need to deliver to everybody in my life that needs it if I, one, don't have the vision of what I want to deliver, and two, I'm not getting fulfilled to be able to go deliver what I need to.
And that's why it's so important to, like, constantly fill your cup. And I think it's important to figure out what that is.
So what fills your cup?
This.
Connection?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot. I mean, for me, it all starts with a morning routine. Mm-hmm. Like, making sure that I'm doing some breath work. Like, staying away from anybody else's agenda. Like, you don't get access to me in the morning. And that's important for me, because
it's a boundary.
It's a boundary. It was funny, too, because I was in the yoga room a couple weeks ago. This guy came in just blazing hot. He's on some, like, I don't know what kind of call he's on, but they're complaining and, fuck this, fuck that. I'm like, dude, you're messing up my zen right
now. Yeah.
Get out of here, dude.
Leave.
And it's just, it comes back to boundaries, whatever mm-hmm. that is for you. I mean, I think I'm a big advocate of, you know, journaling, mm-hmm. making sure you drink enough water, moving the body. I think that's big. I mean, it's simple, but I was watching a documentary called Stutz, mm-hmm. if you saw that one.
I have not.
Pretty good, but one of the biggest things I got out of it is that I think it's 85% of cases of depression come from people not moving their body. So it's like, do something. Go on a walk, stretch, yoga, lift weights, whatever it is. Yeah. Like, those type of things for me in the morning are big. And just constantly staying present. Like, reminding myself to do that all throughout the day. Taking those big breaths.
That's good.
That's for me. But I think it's important to figure out, like, what it is it for you. It's not the same for everybody.
That's right.
And I think that kind of comes back to what you're saying, is, like, people are trying to live the lives of other people when you gotta figure out your shit.
Yeah.
How you operate, because everyone's different. And everyone's living a different version of life. Yeah. That's what I think is crazy. No one is experiencing life like you.
That's absolutely right. We can walk through the same things and experience it completely different. Yeah. We can show up at the same event. You could walk away going, this is the greatest event ever. And I go, this is so dumb. Why would I wasted my time?
Yeah.
And I recorded a piece of content that's getting edited that was like, your screw your morning routine. Right? Because I believe in routine. Routine is absolutely key. But my, like, someone sits on stage and says, hey, you should do this every morning. You should do an hour journaling. You should do your 30-minute devotional. You should go work out. You should go do... That may work for you. It may not work for me. And if I'm trying to map myself because some guy on stage that's super successful and here's the 5 habits of my morning routine that you need to do because it's what made me successful, I could do those the rest of my life and never have success because it wasn't what was my... It didn't serve me best.
Well, I guess even the deeper question there is, what is success?
That's right. Oh, man, we're going... Like, this is...
But I think it's important,
right? It is. 100%.
Even, like, Devin and I were camping with a group of friends last summer, and he asked me that question. He's like, what is success to you? Because it's like, yeah, this guy on stage, he says this is his routine and he's experiencing this success. Like, we don't ever know what's going on inside of other people. Mm-hmm. Like, they might be making a ton of money. They might have a hot wife. They might whatever. But you don't know what's going on inside of them. You don't know if they're happy. You don't know if they're enjoying things. I don't know if they're fulfilled. So why? I mean, again, I get it. But it's like, why do we compare our inner world to someone else's outer world?
Yeah, that's good. I don't think you can define success. I'll say it this way, because I mean, when we say success, immediately people think money. Success has no, money has no barometer on success in a sense of fulfillment. I think fulfillment and freedom is what success looks like. And for me, like, success will be defined, like, if I get to heaven and God goes, hey, this is the life that I designed for you, and you fulfilled all of it, that's success. If God goes, this is the life I designed for you, but, man, you lived it this way, and you could have done all this, and this is what the plan was, well, then that wasn't success. So, it's so funny. So I literally just had this conversation of like, how do you fill your cup? And my answer was, my cup gets filled when I'm connected to the source. For me, the source is God. If I deviate from that and that's not part of my morning routine and I get disconnected over an extended period of time, my life doesn't completely derail, but man, like I'm not firing on all cylinders. I got to reevaluate, realign, get back connected to the source. And then that keeps me in fulfillment to be able to go accomplish the purpose or what my vision is that I feel like is my purpose through Christ. But I mean, it's the same thing. You're going to have a source. Someone else is going to have a source. Like, this is the thing that I have to stay connected to be able to go fulfill what the purpose is. But until you do enough deep work to understand, one, what your purpose is, which takes massive self-awareness and confidence, because my purpose has changed in seasons. Like, there's a big North Star of like, this is what I think my purpose is. But in certain seasons, the purpose is still connected to that, but it looks a little bit different depending on the season that we're in. And if you don't have enough self-awareness and confidence to go, nah, I need to deviate and do this because this is what's going to serve best in the moment, and it's still connected, then you're always going to be searching down the wrong rabbit hole to try to find some sort of fulfillment. So the deep work to really be connected to the self-awareness piece allows you to be able to figure out your purpose. For me, the self-awareness came through, who am I in Christ? Like, that is where I was able to figure out, okay, like, this is the connection. This is who you say I am. Therefore, if this is who you say I am, then I can apply that to what my passion and what I feel my skill set is. That can define my purpose. That allows me to create a vision. Now it's, you know, you can look at somebody that and go, man, they got it all together, and wow, that just happened so quick for them. It's just crazy how quickly everything just came together. But they're living life so intentional.
That's what it is.
And it takes so much time. Like, I've got connected to people in the last couple of years that are like, man, you just kind of came out of nowhere in the last year or two. That's amazing. Like, how did it happen so quick? Like, you have no idea, bro. Let's rewind to 2007. Let's rewind to 2008 when me and my wife lived in the same house with two kids and didn't talk for 8 months. Like, you have no idea where this all started. It may look really quick and fun on the surface, but man, being an entrepreneur is the single most loneliest thing that you will ever do in your entire life. Mm-hmm. Most people don't understand the drive. Most people never understand the big dream, the vision, the audacious goals that seem absolutely impossible. They don't understand the sacrifices that you'll make. You know, why aren't you going out Friday night? Well, because I'm jamming on this business plan and I'm got momentum. I'm in the zone, man. Like, this is way more important. That doesn't make any sense. Like, you lose people in your life. People think that once you hit a certain revenue mark or something in your business, you don't care about them anymore and they don't care about you. And like, you lose people. It's lonely. It's just, it's not a glamorous life to build your own thing. Mm-hmm. But it also, like, nothing really ever comes easy that amounts to impact. And I think that's, you know, I think that's what I love most about watching what you do with vision videos and the personal development side of it, because I've watched the power of, in my own life, of understanding having a vision and manifesting it. And, you know, in 3 weeks I get to speak on the largest stage that I've ever spoke on, and I started manifesting 3 years ago that I would speak on stages of tens of thousands of people. I think the biggest room I'd ever been in was 50 people probably at that point. Like, that's crazy. Why would anybody ever write that? I feel like it's part of my calling. It's part of my purpose. It's a vision. It's something that I want to happen. And I wrote, I can read it to you off of my phone and my affirmations every single day. Like, I'm a personal branding expert. The world knows it. I speak on stages of tens of thousands of people, in front of tens of thousands of people. And I've been writing it like it happened 3 years ago. It doesn't happen overnight. It's not like, oh yeah, I did those affirmations and I created that vision. I watched that vision video 7 times. Like, where's my Mercedes and my beach house? It just doesn't work like that. Like, it's consistency. So the activation of people to understand that, one, how, who are they? When you know who you are, then you can create a purpose and a vision and then an action plan to go get it. But it's not accidental. It doesn't happen. You don't wake up one day and you're like, oh wow, this is cool. Like, it's intentional. I mean, think how structured your life is from just the first couple hours of your day. And I'm going to guess if the first couple hours of your day are structured, the rest of your day is pretty structured. Like, my calendar is my roadmap. Like, everything is intentional and structured. Like, nothing that doesn't provide some sort of value gets attention. It just can't. Now, there's other seasons where, you know, I can golf 4 days a week. I'm not in one of those seasons right now.
Yeah.
So when we live with intention and things are structured and there's a vision and a purpose and a plan, the right things happen because you're making the right decisions and you're connected to the right source. For me, that connection is Christ. When I'm connected to the right source, everything is sequential and falls into place.
Well, I've got, that was mic drop. I got two things and then we'll close up here. And I have a question I always like to end on. But what you said is, like, you find this wherever the person needs to get filled up from, like, find whatever that is. Mm-hmm. And for you is Christ. And so what was interesting, you know, tying into the intentionality of it is, yes, being intentional with whatever you're doing, but kind of comes back to earlier in our conversation when we were talking about listening. And it's like, in order to, like, really be filled up by God, you have to listen.
Yes.
And that's how you create a relationship.
Yep.
And that's what it is. It's like a relationship with God.
Yeah, it's good. 1,000%, man. Good connection there.
Yeah. That just spoke to me. I didn't really think about that before, but as we were talking about, it's like relationships are created from listening so that you can know the person and understand the person.
That's right.
And I used to think about this a lot too, of like, I spend a lot of time by myself. Some of my friends say it's not such a great thing, but, you know, it's a balance.
It is.
But, like, that's how I've been able to build a good relationship with myself and God. Mm-hmm. Is because, like, I sit with myself. It's not I'm sitting with myself watching Netflix and Instagram. Like, don't get me wrong, I do that.
Of course.
But it's like I do have intentional time of sitting with myself.
Yeah.
Because I have a guy that I follow pretty closely, and on his podcast he talked about that. He's like, how do you get to know yourself? How do you get to know anybody? You spend time with them. And it's not you're sitting next to each other on Instagram. You're having a conversation, mm-hmm. You're listening to each other. So why would that be any different with yourself?
That's right, that's good.
And then the last thing I'll share is the whole concept of intentionality. I'm the same way. Like, if I'm not being intentional, like, well, why would I even be doing this thing? But Jesse said this to me. I don't know if you've heard it from him, but he says, when you live intentionally, nothing is random in your life.
I've heard that. I hear it from him. Yeah, that's so good.
I think it was Zach. Actually, I think Zach Keeps.
Okay.
said it to him, and then he's like, I need to put that on a shirt.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so true. I mean, so you think about it, like, I went to the Phoenix Open last week and brought a bunch of clients in, took the whole family, the whole thing, but there was intention that was set. Like, what do I want to get out of this? What's the purpose of bringing 10 clients in from all over the country to go to this event? If we just show up, are we going to get value out of it? No, but if we set intention, now there's, you know, when you go to a AZ Entrepreneur event or you want to connect with people, there's intention. There was intention you brought into this podcast of like, okay, I want to hit on these things. It wasn't just a random conversation. Like, there's things that you want to get out of this, things that I want to get out of this when I think about what I want to say. And so, like, when you operate in intention, things don't just happen on accident.
And that's what's interesting, because, you know, talk about the whole, like, manifestation, law of attraction stuff, whatever you want to call it. But it's just, like, these crazy things just, like, keep popping up. Like, oh, this happened, this person came into my life, and this. And at first, you're kind of like, oh, shit, this is crazy. Like, how did this happen? You're like, after a while, you're kind of like,
yeah. I've been journaling this for 6 years. Like,
yeah, I get it. Yeah. It's cool, but it makes sense.
It's powerful, man. It's powerful. I mean, there's a lot of psychology behind it, how our brain thinks, and we take action on it and all that stuff. But, man, that's good.
All right, last question I got for you. I'm excited to hear your answer on this. What are people saying at your funeral?
Oh, man. Okay, so I have a vision of my funeral. It's weird. Like, I feel like my purpose in life through all things that I do is positive impact. Like, any interaction that somebody has with me, they need to walk away with something positive from that interaction. Whether it's a random server at a restaurant one time or somebody that's in my life every single day. So when I die, there's two things that are going to happen, and then I'll tell you what people are going to say. One, I'll fill a stadium. Like, I want to fill a stadium with people. Not because I think that I deserve a stadium of people to come to my funeral. I believe that if someone shows up at a funeral, that person had insane impact on you. It's the only reason you stop what you're doing to go celebrate somebody that's no longer there. Like, what's going to get you to go somewhere where that person isn't present, but you're going just to celebrate them? Half the time we don't show up to people's birthday parties because we're busy and they're alive at their birthday party. So if someone comes to your funeral, you had impact on that person. So if I can fill a stadium, then I impacted tens of thousands of people. And I believe that's what my purpose is. That's the legacy. Mm-hmm. So there's that. And then two, everybody that comes through the receiving line is going to dump Skittles in my casket because I love Skittles. So that's going to happen. But what are people going to say at my funeral? Number one, they're going to say he was authentic.
Yeah.
Like, I feel it at my core. That's the message that I can deliver through all things, is just authenticity. I think there's insane power of just being who you say you are, and who God created you to be. I mean, obviously, there's all the stuff about family and, like, he was a great dad and husband, whatever. I think that comes with just being a good person. But the other thing is, man, like, outside of the authenticity, I want people to talk about legacy. In the fact of that there was interactions that I had on Earth in human form that transcend over generations. I want to be a chain breaker, and I want that said. I want people to recognize the intentionality in my life, how my wife and I have structured our family, how we structure our businesses, our kids, our faith, that transcends generations, that puts a stake in the ground right now, and for the generations to come, that we change the directory of bloodlines for generations to go forward. That chain breaking kind of just, you know, five generations from now, I want people to talk about man, your great 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 grandfather Ryan dressed like an idiot, but man, here's the impact that he was able to have, and our family's able to do these things because of this impact, and it created this legacy. So I want people to talk about my legacy at my funeral.
Do you really think it's going to come back to you, or is it more so just like, because I subtly and respectfully disagree with legacy.
Okay.
Because I think after a while, like, no one remembers you.
No, that's so fine.
It's not about you. It's about like
what happened
yes. to everybody after you, and it like changed the course, and it affected this person, which affected yep. this person, and this person, this person.
Agreed.
And then the power of one. So, yeah, I think your energy lives on through yeah. the people that you impacted. I could be wrong, but
no, I think 100%.
I don't know if people are gonna say like your great 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 great. Like they might say your great grandfather, but that
they may.
That's about it.
In my but opinion. If the legacy is crazy enough, and it changed, and it's not about me, it's about that there was that much change that was impacted that was so positive. That people remember that.
Yeah. It's amazing. You're a good dude.
No one's ever asked me that question before.
Really?
No. I'm in that space and no one has ever asked me, like, what do you want to say about your funeral? Well, it was actually a thing too though, like so we just created some content for a funeral home that is doing, you can pay to have a funeral while you are alive.
Really?
Yeah. It's so powerful though, man. It's cool. There's a movie about it, and like funeral homes have started doing it. It's called Living Funeral. You have a living funeral because you're never going to get to experience your funeral. So I don't have any idea what people are going to say about me at my funeral.
How old are people when they do these?
40s, 50s, 60s.
Wow.
Old enough to think about.
Yeah, like, is there an age?
There's not, man. It could be like you could do it now and do another one in 20 years and just see like what people will say.
That's kind of cool.
This is super awesome. It's like very dope.
How would you even promote that? Hey guys, I'm pretending
I'm like a party. Because here's the thing, like it's psychology. If you get somebody to come to the funeral home to celebrate somebody and it's a positive interaction, then when a death occurs, there's a different perspective of going into a funeral home, which makes a ceremony more valuable, which helps with healing and grief.
Wow. That's interesting. I'm gonna have to look into that.
Living funeral.
Living.
Funeral. And if you want one, and then no one out here does it, we'll figure it out.
Let's do it, man.
All right.
Well, last thing I want to say is like, you gifted me this book.
Yeah.
And first of all, I just want to say thank you. I'm such a big advocate on like real friends gift books.
Okay, nice.
For you to just send this to me is amazing, and this has been such a great book to read, but I appreciate your friendship. I know we haven't even like known each other that long, but
no, we haven't, man. But my coach gave me that, like told me I had to download that book and buy it. The foreword, I'm like, oh man, Nick needs this book. Wow. So
appreciate
it's cool. I believe I've never said that good friends give books because I hate reading, but books have had more impact on my life than probably, I mean, just there's a lot of power in books, but I think the power comes from implementing and mastering what you read.
Yeah, the application.
That's right.
Well, thanks for being here, man.
Bro, thank you.
I really enjoyed this.
So good.
Appreciate you. Anything else you want to share?
No, man, we covered a lot.
Yeah. Where can people find you?
Do
you
want to? At Ryan Thogmartin.
Cool.
Google it.
Got an event coming up?
Got an event coming up. March 1st, 2nd, 3rd in Scottsdale. It's going to be personal development and marketing mashed into one.
Two good things.
Yeah.
Cool, brother. Appreciate you, man.
Appreciate you.
Alrighty, my friend. Thank you so much for listening to that episode of the Just Grow Podcast. Truly appreciate your time. Know your time is extremely valuable. So to spend it with the Just Grow Podcast, we truly appreciate it. If you did get value from this, make sure and share this with at least one friend that can get some value out of this that can help improve their life in some capacity. With that said, make sure and head over to justgrowvisions.com. You can join our free Facebook group where we go live every Wednesday night, where we have this very systematic structure and framework on how to craft a vision, get very clear on what you want, then turn it into reality very quickly. It's a really cool process. We've helped dozens of clients, and now we have a free Facebook group where you can plug in every single week and just learn how we're doing this and then connect with amazing like-minded individuals. So thank you for listening to this episode of the Just Grow podcast. Make sure and share this. Appreciate you guys, and we'll see you on the next one.